The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia. My name is Jason Freeman. I am very excited to introduce tonight's guest. Publishing industry veteran Christine Pride has held a variety of editorial positions at Doubleday, Simon & Schuster, and Crown, among other publishing companies. In this capacity, she has championed and edited a number of New York Times best-selling memoirs and inspirational stories. Also a freelance editorial consultant, teacher, and coach, Pride writes the Race Matters column for the popular blog Cup of Joe, a new entry of which, I'm told, comes out tomorrow. A journalist, editor, and podcast host, Joe Piazza is also the author of seven novels, including Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win, If Nuns Ruled the World, and Fitness Junkie. Her other writing has been widely published in a variety of places, including the Wall Street Journal, Marie Claire, and Slate. She formerly served as a managing editor for Yahoo Travel, was the executive news director for the print and digital editions of In Touch Weekly, and was a senior digital editor of Current TV. They join us tonight with We Are Not Like Them. In this collaborative novel, Pride and Piazza tell the dual perspective story of two lifelong friends, one black and one white, whose bond is forever changed when the latter's police officer husband is involved in the shooting of an unarmed black teenager. One review calls it a timely, evocative read about what tests us as friends, as partners, and ultimately as humans, and will have you rethinking your own perspectives and experiences, a perfect read for 2021. Tonight's authors will be in conversation with our friend Tamela Edwards, anchor of 6ABC Action News Morning Edition, and a great champion and pal of the Free Library of Philadelphia. Christine, Joe, Tam, thank you all for being here so much. And the screen is all yours.
All right. Yay. Well, thank you for that. And it is wonderful to be here with Christine and with Joe. I truly enjoyed the book. And I just thought book clubs everywhere are going to have a lot to talk about. And you guys were telling me how you met. You met working on a book together. And as you began to talk about this idea, what made you decide to do it in tandem versus Christine saying, Joe, you should do it, or Joe saying, no, Christine, this should be your first book. Why did you decide to write it together?
You know, we really felt that we had a unique opportunity by collaborating, right? That as a black woman and a white woman, we could bring our unique experiences and perspectives to the table. You know, I hear conversations that Joe is not privy to in all black spaces. Joe hears conversations in all white spaces that I am not privy to. People say things that they wouldn't necessarily say in front of me. And so we could bring all these differing angles, experiences, perspectives to the table to write a book that would be very different book than, and a better book than if either of us wrote it separately. And it also, as an editor, you're just looking for a unique way to tell a story, right? And I was still wearing my editor's hat. But it felt like a really unique proposition. We had never seen it done before in fiction, that, you know, collaborating black, white, you know, to tell a story about race in America. And so We Are Not Like Them was born.
It was. And I don't think either of us could have written this book ourselves. Or necessarily should have, in an age where representation is so important. And we really wanted to dig into the hard conversations that people are desperate to have about race these days, but also terrified to have. Nervous about starting, maybe they don't have the right words to start. And we had a lot of those conversations ourselves in collaborating on doing this book, because we had to work out our own thoughts and feelings about race within our relationship, and then we put them on the page for the characters.
You know, when I read it, it was almost a, why haven't I seen this before? Mm-hmm. Of course it should be here. Why wasn't it here? Because it is so, whether it's a new friendship, an old friendship, and I feel as though when I've seen this relationships in books, it's much more distant. There's that coworker that neighbor and everyone's suspicious versus what I feel like so many of us have, which is someone who is dear and close and yet so far. Mm-hmm. And that really shocked me when I read it, that I was like, I have not seen this before.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what we're going for. And we always talk about this statistic where 75% of white people do not have a friend of another race. So, you know, part of the reason why we don't see this kind of relationship portrayed on the page or even see these conversations happening in real life is because people don't have that person to have them with, right? And, you know, even bringing race down to the intimate level or other hard topics, we've seen in kind of the post-Trump era that this is where the friction is, right? This is where somebody has an uncle or a cousin or, you know, going home for Thanksgiving or, you know, how am I going to talk about this? What do I do if somebody says something in front of me about XYZ, right? You know, and so we wanted to wrestle that onto the page, and we see it in a lot of different relationships and dynamics in the book, not just even with our two main characters, which are front and center, but yeah, with their families and their other relationships as well.
Yeah, and we're both big readers, obviously. I mean, books are our life, are literally our life. But there was a reason that we wanted this not just to be a novel, but to be a commercial fiction novel. We wanted to write something that was very accessible to a lot of people, but that didn't feel preachy or a morality tale, or you would walk
or
away
heavy.
Heavy. Oh, heavy. Exactly. You know, so many, we've been doing a lot of interviews and talking to reviewers, and the first thing they say is, we enjoyed your book so much. Are we allowed to say that?
And we're like, this was a fun read.
This is a fun read. Okay. And we're like, it's okay. Yeah. It's okay. We wanted readers to enjoy the book, even though it does wrestle with heavy topics of race and social justice and police violence. But we want you to fall in love with our characters, with these women and their friendship, because we both believe that only through that level of empathy, are we going to be able to change people's hearts and minds?
You know, a big topic in the book is everything that's not said, even among people who you would think could say anything. And it hit me in two ways. And I'll start with one of them, which was from Jen's side, which is something we don't talk about, which is white silence, that you can love someone, but in the arena, when they're not there, when you're in the back seat and your mother's boyfriend uses the N-word, you don't say anything. And she admits over her life, it would happen again and again and again. What was it like going there, Joe? Because I would imagine that's something that your white friends don't want to talk about. Like, yeah, stuff gets said.
Yeah.
And you keep it moving.
It's true. And doing this book together, I had to mine a lot of my personal experiences and really think about what my own world had looked like prior to us becoming friends. I grew up in Philly, or right outside Philly, in Yardley, in Bucks County. Pretty white suburb. I went to an all-girls Catholic school out there. My school was ridiculously pale. I just went back through the yearbook, and I'm like, I'm not misremembering anything, right? No, I'm not. And then when I went to Penn, even though the school was very diverse, my friend group ended up still being a lot of white kids, not just white kids, but white kids who were also from the Philadelphia suburbs. It's like, we just found each other and stayed friends. And I think that is true for a lot of people. I feel bad saying it, but I also want to put it out there because I think that a lot of people will relate to it. We tend to end up becoming friends with people that are very similar to us. And I've had a really diverse group of work acquaintances, like buddies I'll go drinking with, colleagues, but not a really close friend of another race. Christina's my first very, very close Black friend. And so we were having a lot of these conversations for the first time. And it was hard for me to bring up some of the really terrible things that I've heard in all white spaces and even write them on the page. But then I also didn't want to, you know, be kind of a, you know, coward about doing that when Christine is putting so much of her own trauma on the page with microaggressions and things like that. So yeah, we have to go to places that were really uncomfortable while we were writing this book.
And Christine, I would imagine as you were You know, the other side of this is Riley and the decision to always just not have the conversation, to not trust Jen enough as her friend. Though with Riley, it's like, is that a black white thing or just a Riley thing? She doesn't tell anybody anything. But, you know, isn't that a sign of friendship that you trust somebody who you've known since you were a baby, essentially, but she can't do it? And kind of some of that's on her.
Yeah, no, completely. I mean, Riley's a really complicated character. And I think what's interesting about their friendship specifically is they met when they were so young, right? So they were, you know, in daycare. And they never, obviously you're not talking about race, you know, on the playground in elementary school, at least most kids. And so they never had to kind of go there or flex this muscle. And I think for a lot of ways that was okay for Riley, right? Because she is a person who it's easier for her to compartmentalize anything that's difficult, and race is difficult. And so she has kind of packed away some of these thoughts and experiences until she can't anymore. And, you know, something happens that forces this reckoning. And then they've never talked about race, Riley and Jen. They really have not gone there in their friendship. And it begs the question, which is something that Joe and I talked about a lot in terms of writing this book, is can you have a really close interracial friendship with someone who you have not spoken at length about both race in general, but also your own experience with race? And, you know, I think the answer to that for most, if not all Black people, and certainly some white people too, is no. You know, that was something that I was very clear in, you know, my relationship with Joe. From a friendship level, we had to be able to talk about these things, but also given the terrain of the book, we definitely had to talk about these things, and we had to go there. And so the lesson was for our friendship, but also for Riley and Jen in a case of, you know, art mirroring life and vice versa.
I was reminded of the movie. Did you guys see the movie Something New? With who were the actors? He was the mentalist, Simon, whatever. It's a Black woman, middle class Black woman who starts dating a white guy.
Yes, I have seen
and it's
that,
all great. It's all great and well. And then they're in the grocery store and she's just talking about her day. And she's talking about race dynamics. And he blows up in the frozen food aisles. And he's just like, can we not for one day talk about this? And I thought about that with Riley and Jen, because could Riley, the way she can just jump into it with her Black best friend, Gabby, and it's just a running conversation. Could she ever do that with Jen and Jen get it? You need to be in the space. Or would Jen snap at her some point and go, can just not everything be about race? Like, I wonder, could they ever be in that space?
That was Riley's anxiety about it. I mean, I think the hardest part for a Black person to broach a subject or share something about race or personal experience or microaggression or history or what have you is you don't know what the reaction is going to be, right? Like, is this person going to be dismissive, or is this person going to be defensive, or is this person going to be, you know, we call it the fragility, right? Is this person going to be more emotional than even you are, right? And so since you don't know what you're going to get, sometimes that can make you shy away from bringing something up in the first place. And I think that's a lot of what Riley deals with, and that she knows if Jen has the wrong reaction, that really might compromise their relationship. And that's a real fear.
Well, and there's so much fear, I think, on both sides. And that's what we wanted to get down on the page, and we've been talking a lot about it in our interviews. You know, you have fear on the part of the white person. It's like, oh my God, I don't want to talk about this because I don't know the right thing to say. I don't know the right words to use. I'm going to sound stupid. I'm going to insult someone. And then you have the fear on the part of the Black person. Says, I don't know how they're going to react to this, and I don't want to deal with their fear and their shit. And so just like putting out all of that fear on the table and knowing going into it that is an issue, I think clears a lot of that away out of the space. And I will say, what we wrote that into the book. We have one of our white characters saying, it's not always about race. Stop claiming it's always about race. And I've heard that so many times in all white spaces. And it was very important for us to get that in the book. And we had, you know, some early readers, some editorial readers, being like, you can't say that. It's so un-PC to write, have your character say that. And we're like, but what people in the world are saying. So We've got to believe it's the truth. It's raw and it's honest, and that's what we wanted it to be.
One of the things that really jumped out at me when, as you talked about various situations, number one, you really were able to bring the complexity to things. Riley deciding where are her loyalties, you really captured what it's like to be a reporter. How far do you go to get to the story? And then when are you crossing the line? Each of them, Jen and Riley, trying to figure out what is owed to me in this relationship. But what really stayed with me was the conversation in the car in the hospital parking lot where Riley's about to go see her newborn who is sick. And they're in the car and they go there. And you didn't make it soap opera. You didn't make it saccharine. And I really had to sit and try to decide who I thought was right. Is Riley right to say, Jen, it's not all about you. This woman lost her child and you should center her. Or is Jen right to say, Riley, my husband's about to go to jail. I just had a sick newborn and my world is falling apart. I'm going to be a single mother. Like I really, they both had cause to say, you are getting this wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, we wrote the book and we don't
and even know. And we're still like, oh, but that, like everything you just said is what we were trying to do. We think so many of the news stories that are about these police involved shootings end up a lot of times being very reductive or just a flash in the pan. We see a headline and we don't see enough of the human beings behind the headline. And that inflames people even more because then people are assuming what everyone else is like. You're creating an idea in your head. And we wanted to delve into the humanity behind the headlines. And we did not want anyone to be the clear-cut villain. In this book, we wanted everything to have nuance and shades of gray because, in reality, that's life. There's shades of gray, and we worked really hard. We did so much because I'm a reporter. I report everything, including fiction. It's how I make sense of the world. even when I was getting married, I'm like, "How are you married?" And then I wrote a freaking book called "How to Be Married." So we did so many interviews for this book that informed the fiction. So we interviewed cops, we interviewed cops' wives, we interviewed shooting victims and the mothers of shooting victims so that we could try to get that kind of nuance on the page. So you can't just be, we want you to turn the page and be like, I was so on her side, and turn another page and be like, damn it, now I don't know.
And to your point about complexity, it would have been really easy for us to write kind of straightforward morality tale, right? And I think a lot of people, when they just see the blurb about the book, you know, two novelists, one black, one white, to talk, you know, or tackle police shooting, it'll be easy to feel like, or assume that we had an agenda, right? And that we were writing something that had, you know, sort of a, like I said, a clear moral stance, and that we have moral conviction about the book and there's clearly right and wrong. We did want to show all the different dimensions and, you know, to Joe's point about the headlines, we just see them, and especially that we see them over and over again, sadly, and over and over in these waves, it really desensitizes you, right? It's like, okay, on to the next, or you just become kind of a nerd. And so we felt like if we could really show the human toll, the human cost, the human stakes, like what's happening behind the scenes on all levels, it makes things feel more real and gives people a way to empathize in all different kinds of ways with all different kinds of people in all different kinds of situations. And that's, you know, the ultimate goal of fiction.
And I would say that you managed to make the reader sympathetic to Jen as the wife of a cop going to this, and to make them sympathetic to the cop himself, even though he's been involved in this terrible thing, that people make mistakes and you cannot like what they've done, but have conflicted feelings about them. And I thought it was interesting how you handled Kevin's family, that on some level, it's just, wow, his mother is a pain in the ass. And that has nothing to do with race.
Cookie. I know, but I do love Cookie. That's the thing. Like Cookie was one of the most fun characters
to write. But also the issues of race, the way his family might see it. And yet they have another daughter-in-law who is pushing them, that it's not everybody is cookie cutter, all believing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And that was an interesting choice because a lot of people, it would have been they're all on this side and they're all on that side and no one can give.
We fought hard against any instinct to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's, we kept having to ask ourselves, you know, are we presenting all sides of this fairly? Are we digging in deep enough? You know, are we not, are characters not doing exactly what we want them to do? Like we would get really frustrated with Jen, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
She can be really, oh, Jen. Right? You just, like shake your fist to Jen. But
then we remember, we're like, all right, yeah, Jen's terrified she's going to lose her baby. And
it's true to her own experience.
Her husband is literally like the only stable thing in her life besides her best friend, who she's also afraid of losing. Mm-hmm. She's scared. And even Cookie, who's Kevin the cop's mom, she's also terrible in a lot of the book. Funny in a lot of ways. But
a good mom.
A good mom, a loyal mom. And that's, like, your mom, you want the best for your child.
And like, right? She is also scared. She's like, my son might go to jail. Like, my grandson might not have a dad. And so she's fighting for her son. And that's what we wanted to get across in Cookie's character.
Was it fair for Riley to say to Jen, you don't have any other Black friends? It's been 35, 40 years. And why am I the only one?
Yeah.
I think so.
You've said that to me. Yeah.
So I'd be a hypocrite if I said, no, that wasn't fair.
It's fair. It's totally fair. And we talked a lot about that. In fact, I have an essay in Philly Mag that kind of excavates that and tries to figure it out. And I will say, it's not easy to make new friends as an adult. Christina and I were very lucky that we, you know, had kind of a spark when we worked together. Like we worked so closely on my last book, Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win. And then we did a very quickie book together called Marriage Vacation that was based off the TV show Younger. We had to write that in 4 weeks over the holidays. So like we really like got
it. It was intense.
But I haven't made that many new friends as an adult, much less friends of another race. And so I do think we have to acknowledge that it is hard generally to make genuine, good, close friends, the kind of friends you text and go on vacation with, right? But it is fair to say, why don't you have more Black friends? What, I think it says more about what spaces we put ourselves in and how afraid we are of getting out of our comfort zones and going into spaces where that kind of friendship might happen. And so that's the kind of thing we want to be talking about. Instead of attacking people, being like, why don't you have more? Be like, all right, well, what else could you be doing?
Because I think it's less accusatory, and I don't think it was when I brought it up to you, but I think it's more about, you know, sort of examining our society, examining your life, you know? Like, it just bears a certain amount of intention to think about these things. You know, what kind of social circles you're in, what neighborhoods you're choosing to live in, like, where your kids are going to school. You know, if you say you want diversity in all those ways, then what kind of decisions are you making to do that? And if you don't want diversity in any of those ways, then fine, right? But if you do, then there are different choices that you can make. You don't accidentally end up with either an all Black circle or an all white circle, right? Like those, to some degree,
it's intentional
choice.
What it brought to me is, you know, I think I and many Black people I know secretly feel as though we're about 12 people's one Black friend.
Oh my God, yeah.
You start to say, you know what, you could get another. It's okay.
She should have business cards made up that say Christine Pride, everyone's one Black friend.
Yeah. Do you guys, you know, in the end, I'm assuming people who have joined in, I'm going to try to be oblique in case they read it. Riley and Jen come to an interesting place. Do you think that people in real life, friends in real life, would survive these conversations? I mean, books, they're meant to be hopeful, but I kept asking myself in real life, in Philly on top of that,
I think
these people would have stayed friends, honestly.
I think it's a fair question. And when the fact that you're asking yourself that question at the end of the book for us means we've done our job. You know what I mean? Because we purposely didn't want it to be so clear cut, and it's something that you know, we wrestle with and still think about, like, what, you know, the characters live on, so we're like, what are Riley and Jen doing today?
We think a lot about what Riley and Jen are doing.
And you know how their relationship is. But we did want the book to be hopeful. We all need hope in these times, and to not be an indictment on, you know, it's impossible to ever come to an understanding about race in America. You know, that was, that would be terribly bleak and not what we believe. And so I think if there's anything that feels hopeful, it's the idea that you can have these conversations and come out on the other side. And I think it plays out on the page, I hope, to some degree, but also, you know, Joe and I's experience has been that you can have some really difficult, painful conversation and points of reckoning that feel really heavy and, you know, uncomfortable. And then you can come to an understanding. Not always. I mean, there are some things that are going to be unforgivable. It's not like, you know, everything can be kumbaya. There are lines in the sand for sure. But if there can be a lot of openness and honesty about where people are at, and, you know, you just learn to trust somebody else in all aspects of your life and relationship. You trust people in multiple dimensions, and I think you have to, race, if you're talking about an interracial friendship, is something that you have to build trust around and learn to trust each other. And that's something that takes time and is keyword built. Like it's a verb.
Yeah. You have to try. It's effort.
Yeah.
More. You guys keep talking about this in a personal way, Joe. Like, was there something specific that you and Christine got to where you're like, ooh, we're going to need to sit with this for a minute and come back?
Oh, so many times. Yes. We went through so many hard conversations and tears. And I mean, also because this book went through a journey of publishing. Then there were lots of ups and downs in the process. And so there were a couple of points where we're like, maybe we don't finish it. Like maybe after we were contractually obligated to finish it, maybe we can't, when the conversations did get too hard. Yeah. And one of the interesting ones I think that we had was Riley is a certain type of character. She's very type A. She's like Reese Witherspoon's character in Election, but not as big of an asshole. And she seemed too perfect for me. And I love a flawed character. Like I like to create my characters when I've done other fiction and just like mess them up. Like give them like so many like, you know, unseeable warts and problems. And so I did keep throwing things out, and Christine was kind of offended by some of the things that I would throw out there. And I didn't mean to offend her, but you know, like maybe, and we also had other, readers that were throwing out some other things. You know, maybe Riley had an affair with a married man. Maybe Riley's parents were divorced and that's why she's afraid of marriage. And Christine saw those as tropes, like a lot of stereotypes of Black women that she had seen in other places. And I didn't think about it like that because I had these blinders on and I saw it as ways of, you know, making the character a little more relatable by giving her these flaws, things that, you know, if we got down to it, I'm like, when we did get down to it, I'd go, well, I would have given these flaws to a white character.
And my reaction was, but it's not the same, right? You can't treat all their the same. Right. And there's so little representation in pop culture and specifically, you know, in fiction too, of certain types of Black characters, right? There's not the range. Like we so often go into tropes and stereotypes for Black characters. And so it was really, you have to take that much more care to avoid all of these, you know, things. And so when it was, you know, the suggestions were like a drug addiction or a broken home or a teen pregnancy or all these things, which there is a double standard, right? There is gonna be just a different level of stakes there in terms of what that character represents. There's a larger representation. And I think it just, it was a lot of tension in terms of me holding a really hard line about how much I wanted this character to defy so many of the stereotypes that we were constantly seeing.
But you did explain, Riley, why she has to become from LaRoya to Riley, why there's the wall. Why Sean has a different life. Like, you know, why her mother at every turn is like the perfect. I mean, it's all there.
The pressure on her is a lot. And she's, you know, first generation in a lot of ways. Like we talk a lot about first generation immigrants, right? And that's a very specific kind of experience in America. But you know, we're still like first generation post-civil rights, mm-hmm. where people of my generation are still getting first opportunities to do things. So in Riley's case, there's a lot riding on her career and her ambition, because she's the first person in, you know, generations in her family to be able to have these opportunities. That's a lot in and of itself without everything else, right? Like those are high stakes without, you know, her parents also being divorced. Mm-hmm. And so that was a lot of our, as we were thinking about who these characters were, that was a lot of our, you know, we had to really dig into that. And I think, you know, I really challenged Jo to challenge her unconscious bias, which may have been an unfair accusation, but I think so much of creating a character sometimes is the character that you expect, right? So I expect a Black character to be this way. And if it's not, even if it's subconscious, you're like, why don't I feel like this is right, so to speak? And so, you know, we dug into that.
We dug into a lot. I mean, because even with my last novel, when we were trying to create flawed characters, we had, you know, we gave the brother the drug addiction, mm-hmm. right? So I didn't get it at first, but it made for a more nuanced story because of exactly what you just said, Tam. You're like, but we understand why Riley is like that because of these pressures and because of her family. We didn't originally have that in the first draft that we wrote, I think, because then I was like, okay, but why? Why is she like this? We have to explain it. And then mm-hmm. we layered on more about her mother and her brother and her family and the pressures. And so then you can more fully see her character, and she just comes alive in a more important way. But you can see even from like how we haven't talked about this in like a year. This is the first time we've talked about it in an interview. But you can see how creatively like we really got into it over something that I initially did not think had anything to do with race. Mm-hmm. I was like, I just want this character to feel more human and relatable and a perfect, like no one wants to be friends with the perfect character. So no one is necessarily rooting for the perfect person. So it was a thing we never expected, but that was probably our biggest fight.
Right. Well, and I should say the wall, when I say the wall, is in Riley's house, childhood home, is a wall of family pictures and Obama, Martin Luther King. Like as you walk out the door, her parents wanted to uplift her, but it's also reminding her the bar is up here.
Oh,
we've got about 11 questions. I'm going to get to the viewer questions in a moment.
Okay, great.
But I wanted to end by one of the things that became a full circle for me in the book is we find out a story from Gigi about her cousin who was lynched. We see Riley ask her father, you know, how do you forgive and how do you move on? They carry a lot of weight. And yet it is her family, Riley's family, that pushes her to patch things up with Jen. Mm-hmm. Gigi leaves something Gigi is the grandmother for Jen and clearly loves her. Even if she's saying, don't marry the white girl, she's like, go get that white girl who's your friend. The parents, you know, are pushing her to go find Jen. And I thought that was an interesting thing, that they could go through so much pain. And yet, even with what her husband has done, they still hold on to her. And I wondered why you made those choices versus Riley, there's no way you can stand by Jen anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think what we were trying to show is this idea that so often it feels like race plays out in a big picture way, right? Like we make sweeping assumptions about how people would react or act in different situations. And, you know, when you get down to a granular level, a really personal, intimate relationship, it's a little bit like all bets are off, right? Like you get to know somebody in a different dimension. And I mean, it's not so naive to say, you know, we're all colorblind at that point, because that is absurd. But I do think that something about Riley's family's reaction is, you know, almost like the reverse, like, well, you know, Jen is one of the good ones, so to speak, right? Like we know Jen, we trust Jen. We've known Jen since she was a child.
We essentially raised her too.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a little girl that grew up in their house.
And so you would have a different reaction to Jen, that person, than Jen, the police officer's wife that you read about in the Washington Post, right? Like that person is an abstraction. The person that you know that was at your dinner table is you know, somebody that you can give a little more grace and leeway to. And so that was the dynamic there. And, you know, the question that permeates the entire book is what is justice and what is forgiveness? And so seeing it from different angles, I think one of the things that Riley's family deals with, or, you know, is exploring is what does justice mean for this friendship? You know, is cutting Jen off and never speaking to her again, is that the solution that makes anybody happy and, you know, feels like it's a resolution? That's a fair question. And I think what we really tried to do also is that all these characters could have gone either way.
Yeah.
You know, like Riley's family could have said, Jen, Riley, like, what are you doing? You know, lose her number. And
I think Sean, her brother, wanted her out. More. Yeah, yeah. But I think the parents, they, you know, still saw Jen as this little girl who also, I think they knew how much Riley needed her. Because we do see Jen needing Riley a lot. But I think that Riley also became who Riley is. Like a lot of the good parts, Jen was there when Riley changed her name. Yeah. She supported Riley in ways, you know, that neither of them really even thought about. And they didn't think about race when they did it because they were so young, but she just supported her. Mm-hmm. And she supported her decisions. She supported her dreams and aspirations and her growing into the woman that she became. And I think her parents see that.
And that's irreplaceable. And so much of our book is about a long-term friendship. You can't make a long-term friendship as an adult. I mean, yes, you can, I guess, meet in 20s and be adult friends, but it's just a really different.
It's not the same.
No.
Than meeting when you're a child and going through all the versions of yourself, all your reinventions, all your milestones, and becoming the person that you are alongside your friend. It's just that shared history makes for a different kind of relationship. And that's something we're really keen to explore. And that is a factor in, can this shared history sustain this relationship or not? It might have been a very different dynamic and outcome had Riley and Jen met as adults.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a viewer question that's really interesting. They asked, was there anything that you just decided in the end was too difficult or incendiary to include in the book? Like a conversation or a situation that you were like, that's just too much.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. We were really wanting to go there. So yeah. I don't think there was anything that we felt like, oh, we're going to hold back on this.
There were a lot of things we were told to take out. That we didn't.
Right. Yeah. I can't think of anything where it's like, oh, on the cutting room floor, you know.
What were you told to take out?
It ended up on the cutting room floor, but that way had nothing to do with
it. It was too
that was just because they were terrible.
Yeah, in some early editing phases, we were told, take this out, it's too controversial. And we didn't do it. We put our foot down a lot. Yeah.
What's an example of something that somebody thought, no, people can't take that, take it out?
We had an early reader who thought we were being too kind to the police officer, who was like, screw it, you know, just like let it burn, like who cares? And this was a white reader, like who cares if you piss off all the police officers? No, and we were like, that's not the story we're writing. And like, we are not writing this morality tale of burning down the police. We wanted to show the shades of gray in these characters. And I have friends that are police officers. We interviewed so many police officers for this book. And yeah, we really stood our ground with that one. But then there were also things that Kevin, the cop's family, was saying that we were told to take out because it would upset people and people would, you know, pull quotes out and say that we had written this. And we said, no, this hues too close to reality. We're keeping it in.
But we wanted to get a lot of different kinds of feedback from lots of different kinds of, you know, readers. So that some of this we sent a range. And then I think part of this is what I know from my career as an editor, right? Like you get a lot of feedback and then you decide what you're going to do with that feedback or not. But, you know, our editor, Lindsay, has been an amazing editor.
Yeah,
you
she's
know,
the
she
best.
Gave us some really great
oh,
feedback.
We have two amazing editors.
And we have an editor in the UK too. Our book comes out there 2 weeks after our US publication. And so we really trusted that tape. And so, you know, nothing they said we disagreed with.
No. We agree with everything that Lindsay and Henry said. We had a lot of early feedback early in the process.
A lot of people are assuming they're parts of each of you in Jen and in Riley. And somebody asked, what's the funniest piece of you in Jen and the funniest piece of you in Riley?
Oh my God, these are really great questions.
Oh, that's really good. That's really good. Yeah.
I think something that I get a kick out of with Riley is actually, I'm going to flip that question on its head a little bit. I get a kick out of the fact that even though people are going to assume that, you know, lots of Riley, you know, is me, Riley is so buttoned up and so keeps her emotions so inside. And I think that that's like, I could not be more polar opposite than that. Joe knows I have, I'm just like super confessional. I will tell everybody everything. I have a million feelings. Yes. I've had like a million feelings in the course of this 45 minutes already, and would happily share them all. And so I think that that's to the degree, like write what you know and your characters, you know, are informed by who you are. That is one area where we diverge so much that I think I just like get a kick out of that.
You know, I got a kick out of, right, again, Jen is very, very much not like me, but I was pregnant when I was writing Jen's character. So I got a huge kick out of just talking about how terrible pregnancy is. I was just like, I'm just digging in on those details. Like Christine's like, what about the glowing part? I'm like, I'm not glowing. I'm huge and disgusting. But we also both really enjoyed writing Jen's mom, Lou, who was a controversial character, but also just so ridiculous. I think the like peripheral ridiculous characters are my favorite characters to write.
I also think that, I mean, this is my first novel, and I think it's so funny that people, your friends or family, whoever's reading it, kind of searching for what was actually informed by life. And I was talking to, you know, I have a best friend who I met in first grade, who is, I guess, Jen-like in terms of she's a white woman I met in first grade, and the similarities in there. But I was asking her like if she thought anything in the book was related to her. And she's like, oh, the part where Jen bites her lip, that's definitely me, like her nervous habit. And I was like, I've known you for 40 years. I've never seen you bite your lips. That is not you.
And I wrote that because I bite my lips. Yeah.
It was just really
funny. Some of your dating stuff ended up in
some
there.
Of my dating
some
stuff.
Of your weird
which
weird,
we will like, not go into won't. In no, any no, specifics.
No, 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 but it did. Because Christine would tell Christine would call me to tell me about a bad date. And I'm like, that's going in.
It's true.
That's well, you know what? It's memorable. There's not a lot, but there's enough that it's memorable. And I'm sorry you went on those dates. That doesn't sound like fun.
Anything that results in a good story is worth it.
Everything is copy. Everything.
You know, in talking about Riley a little bit, there's a relationship with a white man, Corey, that you know they've broken up and you don't know why. And the thing is that for a great deal of the book, you think it went one way, where in the end of the book, you realize it went a different way. And I wonder, Christine, especially if you were trying to make the point, you know, people will say, not everything has to be about race. And as Black people are like, that's what you think. But Riley does learn that lesson. Yeah. And I wondered if that was a point you kind of wanted to make to people, that not everything maybe is about that. Maybe you should not assume.
Right. And that's, I mean, we really, and thank you for noticing that, because we really were trying to paint all these shades of gray. And another thing we were trying to show with Riley's relationship with Corey is that there is a difference. I think you touched on this earlier, where it's like you can have a friendship as a Black person, a friendship with a white person is even different than a romantic relationship with a white person, right? Like somebody you might raise kids with or get married to, right? Where there's a different level of stakes and commitment. And so we were trying to show also the nuances with that, like how much will race be a factor in different kinds of relationships, right? And so Corey was a little bit of a proxy for that. And also the same way, you can't help who you have a spark with platonically even, you know, we were trying to show it sounds so trite to say it, but like you can't help who you fall in love with. And you know, that happens. And she tried to intellectualize, I think, her way out of it, which is something that we do. And she couldn't.
Somebody named Mary Lowry, and I give you the name because she says, Christine, she's your adoring friend and author, is asking about the process of writing a book with a co-author. What was the nuts and bolts of that process? And that's a great question, because it's one thing to wrestle with things on your own. It's one thing to change your own copy.
Yeah.
It's another thing to be in the womb with somebody else wrestling over their copy.
I'm looking around. I wish I had Mary's book here. I published Mary's book at Simon & Schuster, and it's such a wonderful book, and it's on my other bookshelf.
You go get it. And I'll tell it was
the Roxy letters, though, everybody read. See, I'm a good editor in the endless plug. You are.
So say it again, because I didn't hear it clearly. Say it again.
Question for everybody. It was tough in the beginning. We used Google Docs, which Christine had not used at all before, because no one in publishing uses Google Docs. It's all Word. And I just dragged her kicking and screaming over to Google Docs.
It was our first fight.
It was our first fight. You've heard about all of our fights now. But then we reverted to our original roles, which was I'm writer, Christine's editor. You know, I'm also like not afraid of just like hurling words on a page because I've been a newspaper reporter for so long. That's what we do. We just bang out copy. And Christine, as a first-time novelist, like the blank page is scary. And so we had an outline and I would write, and then Christine would go in and she would edit, but then she would also rip it apart. And that's our second fight.
Yeah.
Because that was so hard at first, because I would write something and I'm like, that is the most beautiful sentence I have ever, and it's just gone. It's just deleted and gone. And why didn't you love it?
It was tense, yes.
It was tense, but then we created a slush document where we put things that might be meaningful in later on.
And then we had a shorthand of, that's important to me.
That has to stay. But it was, for me, I don't think that I've like practiced like how to communicate with someone and worked on my communication with another person as much with anyone except for my husband. And this might have even been more, because we really did have to come up with shorthands for like what matters to me and how do we do this. And it was 3 years. 3 years of figuring that out. And now we both just like, we have ideas all the time about what is happening to our characters. So we text each other constantly. We're like, I'm going into the doc. I'm going in.
Because we're already working on that too. Yeah. So this is now like a much smoother process.
Great, let me know when you're out and then I'll go look at your changes. And it's like, you know, putting layers on a cake. And now we're good. Now I'm like, we can write like a dozen books. We just had to get through that one process. And I kind of liken it to like, marriage gets really hard when you have a baby because you don't know what you're doing. You don't know how to talk to each other about who needs to be doing what. But now we've had two. So I'm like, we can have like nine more.
Because I think your relationship changes and the dynamic changes. And we were in kind of an editor-writer relationship, and we had to figure out how to get out of that. And that was like a friction point, right? You know, you have to like break through and then come out on the other side of figuring out. And there's a lot of trust involved in that, right? Yeah. The same, like you just have to build trust and trust that the person is not, I don't know, doesn't hate your work or—
I fucking hated my work. There were times when I was like, just like—
Oh, I know.
Did you both write both characters, or was it like one wrote Riley and one wrote Jen?
Yeah,
like
we wrote both characters all the way.
We both wrote the whole book. I mean, we each like had our hand in like every sentence in that book.
I think that's interesting that you didn't say, I'll take the white character and you take the black character. That part of this having depth is that each of you took both characters.
We did. I mean, one, we wanted the book to feel like it was cohesive. Sometimes, you know, even like we had to create a narrative voice and give each of the characters their own voices, not our voices. And we wanted it to feel almost like one writer wrote this, that it wasn't disjointed. But also it was a balance for us between wanting it to be coherent in that way, but also we did want to bring our unique experiences to the table. So there are still like the dating stuff or the, you know, things about race, or there's a lot about my family. That wall of excellence has some real world origin.
Like, yeah, I was like, oh my God, this is such a good detail. I love this. And Christine's like, it's my house.
So there are things that are really, you know, from our personal experiences, but they didn't necessarily just, I mean, a lot of them ended up in each respective character, but a lot of them were crossover characters, right? In terms of their memories or observations of things. So in a way, we got the best of both worlds in that way, right? Like the creativity of coming up with all these things together, but also our unique experiences that, again, Joe would not be able to write. I mean, Joe has some good dating stories of her own.
Don't get me wrong,
but they're much more, they're aged, more antiquated than mine are so much more recent. But, you know, we both could bring something different to the table. So it was a balance.
Yeah, well, and I will say, like, now that we have our groove, now that we know how to do this, I love writing a book with Christine because writing is a lonely process. And so knowing that you have someone who's a sounding board and also who has your back, like who was like, all right, I am tired. I can't do this anymore. So tired. And she's like, cool, I'm not tired. I'm just, you know, I'm in it. I'm
well, Joe is it. Never yeah. tired. So I am I don't tired. Know why I get tired. That.
She's got two kids. At some point, she's yeah. got to get tired.
I didn't sleep last night. Then you brought me a bagel this morning. Yeah.
So, yeah. This was my question too. It's also one of the watcher questions, which is movie or TV, and who do you want to play? And Jen, and I should have been asked this before.
We debate this because I'm a limited series girl. Like I love a good limited series.
And I love a movie.
And she loves a
movie. Love a movie.
So like, we'd be happy with either.
We'd be so happy with either. Like my movie thing is I'm like, I want to get in and out in 2 hours.
Yeah.
I want to feel like really satisfied that like I've seen it all, right?
But, and I want to be able to watch for 6 hours on the Sunday. All the way through.
So who plays Riley and who plays Jen?
Okay. All right. We change our minds every day.
Yeah.
I am still obsessed with the idea of Janelle Monáe playing Riley. Like I'm I'm into everything that she does. And then for a long time, we've actually seen Jen as someone like Kristen Bell, who I think can bring
an every woman vibe.
Like you love her. You can feel her loyalty, but she's also really good in a dramatic role. And as we saw in The Good Place, like really great going to like this bitchy place too. We think they might also have great on-screen chemistry. So we haven't cast for anyone else.
I don't understand why nobody's asking us to star it ourselves. Why is that never a thing? No one mentions that. Yes.
I guess I imagine people with strong personalities.
Do it right now.
I imagine Jennifer Lawrence because she nailed the Philly girl so well.
Good, yeah.
She's good. Well, yeah, she was very good at playing Philly.
Let's add her to the list.
Let's call her.
For Riley, I mean, I'm thinking somebody like Gabrielle Union, but then that's a different generation than Jennifer Lawrence. So I can't figure out who would be with Gabrielle or who would be with Jennifer.
The woman who's in, who's the producer in, who plays the producer in The Morning Show. I don't want to give any spoilers away.
I love her.
Yeah.
But is she the right, I see her, is she the right
she's
age?
She's 32, I Googled
her. Is she really? Because I was seeing her as Sabrina, the DA.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh. Option. So is this moving down the road?
We'll send them immediately to Hollywood.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the question is, has it been optioned? Like, is it going down this road yet? Like, can you talk about it? Or
we're starting to have the conversations. We're not officially optioned yet. Christine and I are, we really want to work with the right partners on this. Like, this means so much to us. We want to make sure that we're working with a really diverse group of partners too. We'd love to have, in our ideal world, I think we would have like director producing team that's a black white combo too.
That's the dream.
Yeah. So
it can happen.
It can happen. It totally could. And so yeah, we just started having those conversations and I think we're probably gonna have a lot more this week.
Yeah.
So
more to come.
All right. Well, all exciting. Ladies, it was wonderful to spend the hour with you. Aww. I really did enjoy
really
the
enjoyed
book.
It. Wonderful. Thank you so much. Yes. We had such great questions. And this is, you know, our first launch event.
Yeah.
It was really special to do it with you. Thank you.
Joe was threatening to set up a lunch with all of these mutual people that we know, even though we somehow have not met each other. And Christine, you'll have to come down.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We should
there.
Do it around the, we've got a Philly thing coming up later in the month. So yeah, done.
I'm like Joe Biden. I'll hop on an Amtrak.
Amtrak should really sponsor us, actually.
All right. Well, ladies, good luck this week and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate it.
This was so fun.
Have a good night.
Bye. Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit, and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.